We're continuing tonight our study of the Ten Commandments, as we come to a very simple commandment, a very plain commandment, one that's very easy to understand and not elaborate too much on, and simply says, "Thou shalt not steal." If you notice in Exodus chapter 20, some of the commandments have a lot of explanation with them or some additional information. This one does not. It simply just says, "You shall not steal," or "Thou shalt not steal." And this has been a fundamental virtue, a fundamental commandment throughout history, throughout time, throughout all civilizations. Any part of the world where people exist, people have never known anything about a Bible, never known anything about Jesus, they have within them, in any society, this idea of possession, an idea of property, an idea of what I have is mine and you can't just simply come over and take it. We have in our culture, American culture, from our beginning, this idea of possession, of personal property. You may have heard the phrase before that possession is 9/10 of the law. What that means is if you're in possession of something, if it's in your house, if it's in your pocket, if it's on your body, then the law's on your side. You're going to have, another person is going to have a witness, it's going to have a receipt, it's going to have some kind of document to prove that what you have is really theirs. And if you're in possession of it, the law assumes it's yours unless there's something else to prove it's not. I'm wearing this suit tonight, and anybody that saw me tonight wearing this suit would assume that I own it because I'm wearing it. Unless they bring something else to prove that it's not mine, it's mine because it's in my possession. And that's just a simple thing that's in our law, but it's really in all societies. And I have a right to keep this, and I have a right to keep it as long as I want to. And it's going to be mine until I decide to give it away or sell it or whatever the case may be. So it goes without saying that this would be one of the Ten Commandments, fundamental to how people live in a society. It's condemned all throughout the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, Leviticus 19:11, Deuteronomy 5:19, Zechariah 5:3, Ezekiel 35, Ezekiel 18, talk about it extensively, Amos 3:10, Isaiah 1:23, you go on and on and on, of all the places that talk about the fact that we shouldn't steal. In the Old Testament, anytime stealing is talked about and there's the crime and the punishment, there's always an emphasis on restitution. There's always an emphasis on giving back or restoring what you stole from somebody else. That was just as important as punishing the person that did the stealing. And we would say today that that's very important. A lot of times when there are money crimes in this country, particularly when there's investment schemes that go on and people are scammed out of their money, thousands of dollars, when that person is arrested a lot of times, or some type of repayment plan set up, where part of that person's punishment is having to repay and try to get back all the money that was stolen. That's very fundamental in the Old Testament. In Proverbs chapter 6, verses 30 and 31, listen to these two verses and think about the understanding, or at least the compassion that's talked about in these verses, but yet also the fact of repayment, even though someone stole. Proverbs 6, verses 30 and 31. Men do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is hungry. But when he is found, he must repay sevenfold. He must give all the substance of his house. Very interesting how the whole act is considered. They said, you can understand if somebody steals because he's hungry. Everybody would understand that. If he didn't have any money, if somebody's poor, everybody has to eat. He said, you wouldn't despise a man if he stole because he was hungry. But even in that situation, even in a situation where you'd have compassion on somebody, even in a situation where you would say, yeah, if I were him, I might do the same thing. He said, when that person is called, when he is found, he says, he has to repay sevenfold. And, of course, this is in Proverbs, and there's probably a lot of just a principle here of repayment. But you can see the idea. of saying, look, that person doesn't just need to give back what they took. They need to give back more than that, because for a period of time, the person was out his property. And imagine they get inconvenience and maybe the fear that someone has broken in and stolen something from them. You need to give back more than you actually took. Think of the New Testament and Zacchaeus. After he goes to the tree and Jesus says, come down, I'm going to go to your house. And they remember what Zacchaeus said. He said, if I defrauded anyone of anything, being a tax collector, we know that that was a pretty common thing for tax collectors to take more than they were supposed to take in taxes. He said, if that's what I've done, I'm going to repay four times the amount. He understood that principle. He would have understood that generation-long idea that if I have taken, someone takes, they need to repay. There needs to be restitution. We can't always do that today, can we, when it comes to stealing? It's not always possible to return something that was stolen. Something was stolen 20 years ago. You can't give that back all the time. If it's money that someone takes from someone else and they spend it, and that person ends up in prison, a lot of times the victim can't get that money back. There's no way to get that money back. When other things are taken from somebody over time, it's not always available for us. It's not always possible for restitution to be made. But it's interesting in the Bible that there was an emphasis on that. If you take and you're found, you have to give back. You need to make it right. And we can, of course, apply that principle to so many things in life. It's one thing to say, hey, you caught me. It's one thing to say, I'm sorry. But you need to say. But then we also need to say, well, what do I need to do? What do I need to change? How is it possible to fix? How can I fix the problem that I created? Put things back the way they were. In our culture today, in the way that people think, so a lot of times you hear excuses for stealing. So I don't understand. I wouldn't make an excuse for someone stealing, but we do. Think about a few ways in which we make excuses for stealing. Sometimes we say, well, you know, somebody says, I just can't help it. I have a compulsion to steal. A lot of times shoplifters, at their trial, if they steal from a lot of places, a lot of times be a wealthy person, be called shoplifting. You know, why would a wealthy person go into a store and take something and not just pay for it? They have all the money they ever thought about having. They say, well, I can't help it. I'm sick. I have a disease. I have a compulsion. I just can't help it. And maybe other situations we give somebody that excuse. Other times we say, you know what? It's impossible to steal from the government. Can't really steal from the government. That's my money. It's impossible to steal from a wealthy person. If I take something from somebody that's wealthy, you know, they can just go buy another one. They can replace that. I need things. They have everything. If I take from them, you know, that's no big deal. When it comes to April 15th every year, and I withhold things that I'm supposed to give to the government and taxes, you know, that's not stealing. That's just being smart. That's just the way it is. They're stealing from me, so I'll steal from them. Another sort of approved theft that goes on in our culture is taking out a loan, going into a debt, and really have no intention of repaying it. But someone willingly, eyes wide open, runs up debts that they know they cannot repay, but they take them out anyway. And they can become quite hostile when that, either it's a company or it's an individual, says, when you took this loan out, you said you were going to repay it on this day and this much money. And you get mad about that. They called and said they want their money. Well, yeah, you agreed to pay it when you borrowed it. On this day, at this time, and this amount of money, you knew that when you took it out. Why is it that you accumulate a lot of debt and owe someone and say, I don't have any intention of paying that back. That's just a roundabout way to steal from somebody. You're lying to them in order to take their money. We can make excuses for stealing. We can justify even stealing. But there's a few other ways, and for the remainder of our time this evening, I want to think about some areas of life in which there's a lot of theft, but it deals with things other than the property. You'll see, we can feel really good about ourselves and the facts. We can say, oh, I never stolen anything. Somebody can say, I never shoplifted. I've never taken anything. Any sermon about stealing doesn't apply to me. You know, I'd be a good sermon to go preach at the jail. I'd be a good sermon to preach down in prison. Those people need to hear about stealing. I've never stolen anything, and this isn't for me. Well, we can steal things that aren't property. We can steal a lot of things, and I think all of us at some time in our lives have probably done this type of stealing. The first type of stealing that goes on is the stealing of someone's time. You can steal time from somebody else. We only have so much, we're all using the same amount of time every day. We all have 24 hours in a day. Somebody else says they have 30 hours in a day, this person's got 10, this person's got 18. And so, well, we can waste this person's time because they've got 30 hours they're living with today, and we're all living under the same clock. We all have the same amount of time every day. And we also operate in what society calls a social contract. That's also kind of a legal term. Social contract is when October 31st comes around and there's people knocking on your door wearing a mask, you don't call the cops. That's a trick-or-treater. They're trespassing. They're breaking the law. But we have what's called a social contract, which means we all know what's going on. Somebody's going to call the cops, and it's not trespassing, and we just kind of let that go. Well, part of a social contract is that things start at a certain time. And when that thing starts, whatever is agreed to, assume that you're going to be there. In fact, you have a responsibility to be there. Is it breaking the law? No, it's not breaking the law. There's no law about that, but it's just sort of agreed that if there's a time, then there's an expectation. And when the person's not there, and everyone else is ready, and they made a point to be there, they made a point to be sure that they withheld their end of the deal, then you should as well. If not, you're stealing from somebody else. You're stealing their time. They can be doing other things. They could have used that time to do anything else. But you've decided to take their time from them. A lot of people can steal others' time in the jobs that they do. If they're in customer service, you may have a job where you deal with the public. And if you don't do your job well, and somebody that, again, is going to do something they're supposed to do, whether it's a government office, whether it's at a restaurant, whatever it is, and there's an agreement that an exchange is supposed to take place. And you're dealing with the public, and you fall asleep at the wheel, so to speak, and you're not doing your job. That's a type of theft of someone's time. We steal time so often from others. The second type of stealing that goes on in our culture, unfortunately, and happens all the time, is the stealing of innocence. And steal innocence. Jesus talked about this in Matthew chapter 18. In Matthew chapter 18, Jesus talked about, he was using the example of children that came to him. And he said, I don't want you to deny these children to come to me. And unless you are converted and become like little children, you're not into the kingdom of heaven. And then he went on to talk about what do we call my children or the little ones, the Bible says. He went on from that statement to talk about becoming a stumbling block for those. And most Bible scholars say Jesus wasn't so much talking about small children at that point, that really he was using those children as an example of a new Christian, one of the somebody new to the faith, a child of God, somebody who's an infant in Christ. And he talked about not becoming a stumbling block for them, that you don't stand in the way of their faith as they're growing up in the faith, as they're maturing in their faith. You don't get in the way of that. You don't stand between them and God. And Jesus had some very harsh words for people that would do that. He said, it's better that you have a millstone hung around your neck and thrown into the ocean. That was a punishment they would have been aware of. The Greeks did that. They're just drowned people, tying a heavy stone around their neck. It's a cruel and horrible thing to see, to witness. And Jesus says, you know what? That's better than what you'll face if you're a stumbling block for somebody in their faith. And the more you think about it, that just kind of makes sense. That really is one of the worst things you can do, is to keep something from being a faithful Christian. You know, if I prevent you from getting a job that you really want to have, that's bad. But you can get another job. Or if I stand in the way of a relationship that you have with somebody else, that's terrible. But that can be fixed. But if someone loses their faith because of me and is condemned for eternity, that can't be fixed later. So it only makes sense that Jesus said, if you're a stumbling block for somebody in their faith, that's worse than the worst kind of capital punishment you've ever seen. Is someone being thrown in the ocean with a weight around their neck. But there's a theft of innocence that goes on all the time. We know that there's so many things that young people are exposed to today that they hear and they see that they didn't hear and see a long time ago, a few generations ago. There are things they hear and see that didn't even exist a few generations ago. Things they hear and see that they would have been mature adults before they ever confronted some things. And so one of the best things grown-ups can do is to try to protect that innocence of young people. Is try to protect their hearts, protect their minds from certain things. I know that's nearly impossible in the world we live in. I sympathize with parents that are dealing with that on a daily basis and trying to live in the world and be not of the world, and try to teach your children to be that way as well, to be a good influence, but not to be too exposed to certain things. That's very, very difficult for parents to do. What do you say in front of your children? What type of grown-up things do they hear they probably don't need to hear? Maybe it needs to stay between mom and dad. Well, how do you talk about things? We need to be careful about all of those types of situations. But that's a type of stealing, to steal someone's innocence, whether they're new in the faith or whether they're an actual child growing up. You can steal time, you can steal innocence. You can also steal somebody's character. That's another thing that people can steal. Somebody can say, well, I've never stolen anything. Police have never chased me. Have you stolen time? Have you stolen innocence? Have you stolen someone's character? How do you do that? Well, obviously we can steal character through gossip. We can hear half of a story, half of the truth, spread that as if it's 100% fact. Focus on the negative thing that somebody did and act like they've never done anything right in their life. But be sure that the bad thing gets spread all over the place to people who don't even know the person. And you know they're going to tell the next person, and the next person, and the next person. And before you know it, of course, that person's character has been stolen, their good name. And we know in Proverbs, a good name is like jewelry. It's something you got to have. Once you lose that reputation, nearly impossible to get it back. When you take that from someone else, it's going to be a destructive thing for that person. Somebody once said there are three things that just never come back. A spent arrow, a lost opportunity, and a spoken word. A spent arrow, a lost opportunity, and a spoken word. It's all true. You can't get those things back. It's just out there. You've heard the illustration before that I've used. Some of you may not have heard it, so I'll use it again. About the man who was going around town and got angry at his neighbor, and he went around spreading all the rumors and really wanted to ruin the guy's life. Come to find out years later that he was wrong. He had got all the story wrong. It was misinformation, and he felt terrible about that. So he went next door to his neighbor and he said, "Buddy, I'm sorry. I had the wrong idea about you, the wrong impression. I didn't know all that I needed to know." And the guy said, "Well, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's good enough for you just to say that." And he said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a feather pillow." And he said, "I want you to walk out your front door on your porch, and I just want you to shake those feathers out of that pillow." And he said, "What is that going to do?" He said, "Just do it. I'll tell you later." The guy takes his pillow, walks out his front door, and shakes out all the feathers. About a week later, the neighbor comes by and he says, "You remember when you shook out that pillow with all the feathers in it?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "All right, now I want you to go up and collect all those feathers and put them back in the pillow." He said, "That was a week ago." He said, "The wind is blowing, it's rained. I don't know where those feathers are, all over the state." He said, "That's impossible to get all those back." And he said, "You're right, that's impossible for me to get back everything you said. To go hunt down every person that heard that story, to explain to them that you lied." He said, "I can't get it all back." We can steal people's character. It's very easy to do, particularly with the internet today, with being able to write things online without your real identity. To have usernames that are just random letters and numbers, and where you can say things. We know we have a term now, cyberbullying. And it's particularly, of course, flourishing among teenagers, where messages and things that online can be said to send in text messages on their phones and on the internet. And you can't get away from that. Young people, you know, just being on the computer and seeing these things, and it gets in their head, and they, you know, who's saying this? Who's saying these things about me? And sometimes they don't even know. There's no identity with it. And again, a new thing that wasn't a problem in previous generations, something that we would have had to worry about a long time ago, that is a thing now. We know that's caused a lot of problems, and a way to get inside somebody's head when you're not even with them. The character can be stolen all the time in so many different ways. The last thing tonight to think about in terms of things that can be stolen that we really don't think about too often is trust. Steal time, you can steal innocence, you can steal character, and finally you can steal trust. Five times in the Old Testament, the Bible condemns manipulated scales. In those days, when you bought something, usually it was weighed. Pretty much anything you bought, it was bought based on the weight of it and how much of it you bought, particularly in markets. When somebody would be going along, you know, a bag of this and a bag of that and so on. And a lot of times, since that was the only way to price anything, a lot of times the scales they would use were being manipulated. They'd somehow put something underneath it and add a little bit of weight to the scale. And you thought it was an even scale, but it's really not. Weighted against you. And the Bible, five times in the Old Testament, since that was how they did business in those days, there's a lot of harsh terms about those who used manipulated scales and how they dealt with people and their business. And how you can lose trust. And that way you're stealing the trust that you may have with somebody else and how you deal with them. And shady business transactions. We don't use scales that way. Today, some things are still weighed in that way, and we know things can be manipulated. Businesses can obviously manipulate prices and manipulate so many things. We see all the news, the arrests and the investigations and all that goes on with things that we buy and products that are available and all of that. It's a shame that we get cynical about going to buy anything, whether or not it's a good deal, a fair deal, if the person selling it is telling me the truth. Why do we become cynical? Why do we get to that point? It's because somebody stole somebody else's trust. And that person told the next person, and so on. And eventually we look around and say, I don't know who I'm supposed to trust anymore. I don't know where to put my money because I feel like somebody's just going to steal it. They're just going to take it. I'm not going to get what I'm agreeing to buy. That theft of trust can happen with things. It can happen in relationships, of course, where things are finally revealed that haven't been revealed before, and somebody looks at that and say, why didn't you tell me that? I didn't know that was going on. Why didn't you trust me? Once that trust has been violated, that stays in the back of somebody's mind. It's always amazing when two people can stay together and get past those situations and really put those things away and leave the past in the past and say, I really do trust you again. But it's so hard to get that back. It's so hard for us as human beings to reestablish trust once it's been violated over serious situations. There's so many things that can be stolen. These are just four of them, but we don't think about too much. Somebody's property is theirs. We should respect that. We shouldn't try to manipulate them out of that. We can see why this is in the Ten Commandments. Of all the things that were part of those essential ten, just simply making a statement, you shall not steal, is so profound. We have to think about that in time. What are we stealing? If it's not property, are we stealing something else? The Bible's clear that we shouldn't do that. We should respect what someone else has, whether it's their property, whether it's their time, whether it's their innocence, whether it's their character, whether it's their trust. We know that this lesson isn't particularly evangelistic in terms of the gospel, about convincing someone or persuading somebody to be a Christian. But we always allow time in our services for somebody to come forward, if they need to become a Christian, to be baptized into Christ. As we said earlier, there are three things that you can't get back. One of them, of course, is a lost opportunity. This opportunity tonight is going to be gone in just a little while. We don't know if there'll be it tomorrow. We don't know if there'll be another opportunity. But you have now, you have tonight, to do that, to become a Christian. If you just need prayers, we can also pray with you. Whatever you need, please come while we stand and sing.